Welcome to the Lady Up America podcast. I'm Diane Canada, your host. So happy you're here today. Thanks for carving out some time for us. Hey, y'all, today I want to title our show New Hampshire and New Book. Be right back. All right, guys, we are officially in election season. Last week, I did the show on the Iowa caucuses. This week, I want to focus on New Hampshire. And, you know, for those of us who are still fairly new to politics, why do we care? What's in New Hampshire? Why is it so important? What is all the gist about around that particular race? Like, what is it? What is going on there? So I want to break it down to you today. So we're going to get to that in just a second. But I also want to announce, y'all, this is still the proof copy, but the Lady Up America book is going to be released February 8th. Wow, I'm so excited. Woo! Y'all, this has been 3 years, really 53 years of my life, but certainly the last 3 years, all of these concepts that God's just been awakening me to and insights and my heart and my heartbreaks and the clarity that I've been getting in the political realm and the crash course in politics, everything the last 3 years that I've been building has culminated into this book, and I'm so proud of it. So we're going to talk about that today too. But let's first get into New Hampshire. Let's get some clarity. All right, guys, here's my understanding of what's going on in New Hampshire, just kind of at the elementary level, which is the way I need to understand it. So if you're like me, cheers to you out there, ladies who are just, whew, politics can be overwhelming and it can be like hard to grasp why it matters in our everyday life, but it really, really does. So stay with me on this. I promise it's going to be worth it. Okay. Drinking my hot tea, by the way, and we have got snow here in Nashville. We had several inches fall. We've been snowed in all week, my husband and I. We're about to get another inch, I think, or so today. So definitely got the hot tea and the hot chocolate working here this week. But okay, so New Hampshire. So whenever I would hear, y'all remember that old Reba McEntire song, "When whoever's in New England's through with you and Boston has better things to do." I love that song, right? And I used to think, I thought this house, how silly I was, or how removed from politics I was. I thought New England was a place. I thought New England was a state. It's not. Okay. New England describes a region in the northeast area of our country, and it's comprised of several states: Connecticut, Vermont, and New Hampshire is one of them. Rhode Island is one of them. It's like a little cluster of states up there that are referred to as New England. I think they call it New England because that was where the original 13 colonies were in America when they came from England to the New World. I think that's why they named it New England. Ta-da! Right? Oh, Lord, help me. Okay, so anyway, New Hampshire, just this little bitty state up there, all right, but it's very significant in our election season because they are the very first primary vote of the whole year. Okay, so I know maybe some of y'all are saying, "Well, no, well, I watched your show last week and we talked about the Iowa caucuses." Okay, that's caucuses. That's different than a primary. So let me just kind of, the best I can, try to draw the differences for us. So Iowa, the way they do things is they caucus up, which means they get in groups and they advocate for their candidate. And then they kind of sway, they try to sway voters one way or the other. You show up in one night in Iowa at 7 o'clock. You hear from the different candidate representatives. You cast your vote right then, not by ballot, but by writing your name on a piece of paper. It goes into a box. And then they show those publicly at each precinct in Iowa, and the results come in immediately. So like within an hour or two max, typically, maybe a little more than that, we know who won the presidential primary in Iowa. So like you have, so it's all about the Republican primary. Democrats used to do it this way too, although they opted out of it this year. No shocker. But the way that it works is that you've got all the Republican candidates. So we had Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Ron DeSantis, and Trump all kind of vying for those caucus votes. And then people wrote down their favorite. They cast their vote for that. And then it was announced. And so Trump won it by a landslide, like historical numbers. I think he came in 51 or 53% of the vote, something like that, among all four of them. Nikki Haley and Ron DeSantis were kind of neck and neck, although Ron did take second place by a thin margin, but he did take it. And then Haley came in third, and then Vivek came in, I think, around like 6 or 7%, if I'm not mistaken. So, but Trump, I mean, dominated in the Iowa caucuses. So now, but that's very different than a primary. So now they move on to New Hampshire, which is the first traditional primary, which is how we narrow the field down to one candidate out of four Republicans. Okay, so they did it in Iowa. Now New Hampshire is going to take a stab at it. They're going to be voting on Monday, but it's going to be more of a traditional primary. So what the primary is it's kind of like, it's very similar to traditional election day for the big general election that's going to be coming up in November. It's similar to that in the sense that you can, a lot of times you can early vote or you can go vote that same day all day long. You can vote on that day. You don't have to show up at a specific time like you do in Iowa. You can, you know, all throughout the day. So if you can come before work or during lunch or after work, whatever it might be, but you can show up all day. And you can go in and you actually cast a ballot. So they actually have traditional ballots there. And you go in and you say, okay, I want a Republican ballot. And then they will just give you those four names. Actually, it's just going to be three names now because Vivek has withdrawn from the race. He's now backing Trump completely. So it'll just be the three of them, Trump, Nikki Haley, and Ron DeSantis on that ballot. People will go in as they can throughout the day on Monday and they will cast a ballot for their favorite Republican candidate. And then hopefully that night we will have results. We'll be able to tell who New Hampshire has chosen as their Republican favorite. Okay. So all the states will do this, but, and I'm pretty sure that all the other states do a primary. I don't know if there's any other states that do the caucus kind of thing like they do in Iowa. I think that's unique to Iowa. If y'all know better, let me know. But most of the other states, if not all the other states, will do it like I just described in the primary format. So that's how we narrow the field down to one Republican as far as before the national convention. Then once all the states kind of put in their vote, then there are what they call delegates in each state. It's a certain number of people based on the population in that state. They get assigned a certain number of people that can then go to the Republican National Convention, which is going to be this summer. And then they go cast their votes at that convention. And then that helps to solidify who the Republican nominee will be. So basically, like all the states then are nominating their favorite Republican to run for president against Biden or whoever else they decide to put in there. I don't think Biden's going to stay in personally. I think they're going to slide in Gavin Newsom or somebody, but we'll see. So anyway, that's what's going on in New Hampshire. So that's why it's so, so important. Now, the other thing about New Hampshire that I want to share with you guys, which is really disturbing, is that they have what they call open primaries. So let me explain that. Sorry, I felt like I was about to cough. So the way that open primaries work and the way they're going to do it in New Hampshire is they will allow you to, like, let's say that you voted Democrat last year and you want to come in this year on Monday and say, I'm going to vote, I'm going to change my affiliation, I'm going to vote Republican today. You can do that. You can walk into the precinct and say, I want to change my affiliation, I'm going to vote Republican today. Go cast your vote. And then as soon as you walk out of the voting booth, you can go back to the desk and say, okay, I want to revert now back to Democrat. Now, I understand the idea is for you to not have to be pigeonholed. Like, let's say that you voted Democrat last year and maybe there really is a candidate this year that moves you and you want to vote for them. I get that. But a lot of states have what they call closed primaries, where you basically have to declare your affiliation ahead of time. And you don't get to change the moment you get to the precinct, and you don't get to change right after you're done in the voting booth. And the reason why this is important is because let's say that a bunch of Democrats get together and they really hate Trump and they want to try to help Nikki get the nomination. They can go in, a whole bunch of Democrats could go in and say, we want to change our affiliation. They could go in and vote for Nikki Haley, come out and change it back to Democrat just to help her get elected, even though they have no intention of voting for her in the general election. So then in the general, they could still go vote for Biden or whoever. All right. How about that? Isn't that crazy? It's just crazy to me. So this is one of the ways that elections get rigged, it's just, or at least tampered with, let's just say, in a legal way. So it's just very upsetting that people don't take this right to vote more seriously and cast their vote for who they really, really want, as opposed to trying to work the system and game the system to get their candidate positioned well. I really hate it. Now, a lot of people say that that's what happened in Iowa too. A lot of people are saying that people turned out from the Democrat Party or independents who plan to vote Democrat in the general turned out to vote for Haley in the primary just to try to get her positioned up. So who knows? There's all kinds of back alley deals and all kinds of stuff that goes on behind the scenes and under the surface. And it's, again, we probably don't want to know, but that's why New Hampshire is so important this week. And the reason Iowa and New Hampshire, and then they'll go to South Carolina after this. Another reason why it's so important is because they kind of set the tone for the rest of the country. They let a lot of the news pundits and a lot of the networks and stuff kind of get a temperature reading on the American people. And it's probably going to be very different in New Hampshire than it was in Iowa, because again, very different demographics. In Iowa, you've got a lot of farmers, a lot of people in agriculture. You've got a lot of people that are very, traditional and conservative and all that. So it wasn't that big of a surprise to me that they came out with such a big victory for Trump. And with the number one thing on their mind being immigration, a lot of people in the past thought it was the economy, but now immigration has really kind of taken the lead of what worries people, what's keeping them up at night. So we got that reading out of Iowa. Now in New Hampshire, you've got a lot more independent thinking people. Like people in New Hampshire, again, from what I understand, I've never been there. I've never met any of the people there. So I'm not trying to pretend to be an expert on New Hampshire. I'm just saying that what I've done a lot of study on it here lately. And they are extremely independent minded. They don't like to affiliate one way or the other. They sort of like to stay fluid, let's just say. They like to be able to make their decision based on a candidate. They are very conservative, which really surprises me that they would lean in the last several elections toward Hillary Clinton and toward Joe Biden and toward Obama. Like, I don't know why that happened, because they are so conservative. They believe strongly in fiscal responsibility. In that state, they have, I believe I read, no income tax and no sales tax. Like, they believe that people should have control over their own money, that they should decide where it goes. And so they have, a pretty good handle on fiscal responsibility in New Hampshire. They also really believe in strong borders and all these things. So Nikki Haley may get a surprise there. She thinks that she's doing really well there because it's so many independents and moderate Democrats. She thinks she's going to win a lot of those, and we'll see. But with immigration being so top of mind and those people being one of the original colonies and being so conservative minded, it might be another big upset in the Trump camp for the Trump camp against the other candidates. We don't know. Now, Ron DeSantis, he came in second, I told you, in Iowa, and he's when he left Iowa, when all of them left Iowa, Nikki Haley and her team and a lot of Trump's ground game people, they went straight to New Hampshire to start holding events and all there. And Ron DeSantis is holding events there all this week, but he initially went to South Carolina first to do an event there, maybe at a couple of them. I don't know. A lot of people are speculating. They're like, oh, he gave up on New Hampshire. He doesn't think he can win there. I don't think that's the case. I just think he wanted to get some seeds planted in South Carolina early. South Carolina is Nikki Haley's home state. She was governor of South Carolina. She, I believe she also served in their state assembly there before becoming governor. So she's got a lot of history there. The problem with her there is that a lot of people don't like her in politics there. Now, she will tell you that that is because she came in and lowered the boom on a lot of things that were going on in their legislature that she didn't think were on the up and up. Like, for instance, voting for things like especially involving taxpayer money and not going on record about it, like kind of just doing what they call voice votes, you know, and not writing them, not putting them down in where they could be documented. And so she insisted that all votes be documented. She wanted everything to be on the up and up, been transparent. So, you know, there's that. So I go on these news shows. I don't know if you guys ever see me on Scripps News and on News Nation. And I go Fox News. I go on a lot of these stations and they ask me all the time, you know, who are you for in the Republican primary? And, you know, I was on with one of my favorite anchors the other night. With Chance Seals. And he was asking me, he's like, okay, Diane, you're always tiptoeing around this question. Are you finally going to tell me who you're for? Is it finally late enough in the race now where you'll tell me who you're for? Like, yes, I'll tell you. So, and I'll tell you guys too. So I had, when I ran for office in 2020, I was on the Trump down ticket and I met a lot of Trump's people. I met a lot of people that worked with him, that were in his cabinet, that were, you know, on his team in some way. I've met Mike Pompeo. I have become friends with Morgan Ortegas. I knew Jenna Ellis. I mean, you know, there are just a lot of people in that Trump tree, so to speak, that I knew had gotten an opportunity to get to know. And I can tell you that what they tell me as far as how they were treated by him and all, other than Jenna Ellis, the rest of them tell me that he was a wonderful boss, that he picked up the phone and called and checked on them all the time, that he cared about them, that, you know, I mean, everything I always heard about him was positive. And then I would see how he was treated in the media. It's very different. Now he does say things, he kind of sets himself up for a lot of, you know, media attack. His tweets could be mean, the name calling, all that stuff. Yes, I understand why people are totally turned off by him, but I don't ever look at the personality. I'm looking for the policies. I tell you guys this all the time, those seven conservative values that I'm always shouting from the rafters, the seven load-bearing walls of our country, that's what I care about. Who's holding those up? Who's got the, what do they call it? The oomph, you know, the chutzpah, whatever, to hold those load-bearing walls up. I think Trump has that. He does that. Every single one of them. Fiscal responsibility, peace through strength, human dignity, limited government, free markets, individual freedom. There's one more. Gosh, it's so hard for me to name them off. I always forget one, but I think they say limited government. Anyway, those seven, you look at his policies, every single one of them was upheld, which was why our economy and our border and world, the where we sat on the world stage and all of that looked very different under his administration than this one. You've got this administration spouting saving the soul of our nation and saving democracy, yet they are literally taking hammers to every one of those load-bearing walls. So short answer is I'm for Trump. I will tell you this, though. I did have an issue with Trump when he started waffling on abortion. And when he started saying that he wanted to agree to a 15-week ban, I understand where he's coming from, that the country is very divided on this issue and that if he wants to get elected, he's going to have to compromise. But in my mind, you don't compromise when it comes to the lives of babies. You just don't. If it is if the mother is going to die, then that's a different issue. Then that becomes an issue of self-defense, and we can look at it a different way. You know, anyway, we can get off on that subject another day. But because Ron DeSantis stood so strongly for the sanctity of life and that human dignity value, he won my vote initially. He really did. He was really winning me with that. But as I've watched how the primaries are playing out, and I've thought about this a lot, I don't think Ron DeSantis is going to end up being our nominee. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, with God, with the favor of God, anything can happen. But the other thing I think about is we need a pit bull in there who's our pit bull, somebody who's going to go in there and be able to exert that intimidation to other world leaders. Because our world is so unsafe right now. It is so unstable right now with the war we have going on in Israel, the war in Ukraine, China setting its sights on Taiwan right now. We've got, you know, Iran like sitting on a sitting on go. We've got the Houthis attacking our people. I mean, there's so much instability in the world. And the United States is the one who brings calm to that through their strength. And we have such weakness in the White House right now. We had such strength in that area under Trump. I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think that Ron DeSantis, as much as I like him, I don't know that he has that same level of intimidation that he can exert on Xi Jinping and on Putin and on these other world leaders that Trump has. And Trump already has a history with them. They know he means it. They know he'll back it up. And I think that's what we need right now. That border needs to be closed. No footsies with that border. We play no footsies with Mexico, no footsies with China. I mean, we need somebody who's going to go in there and absolutely clean house. And we already know Trump's capable of that. He's got a track record of that. He's got a he already knows now how the system works. So I think having a 4-year break and being able to now to come back in with that, he hadn't had a break from them attacking him for sure. But what I mean is he's had 4 years away from the White House. Now, when he goes back, I think he's going to go back with new tactical skills on how to get it done. So I think for the safety and security of the country, which has to come first, I mean, government's number one job is our national security. I think for those purposes, he's the man for the job at this hour. I don't agree with him on the abortion issue. I'm going to go right on record and saying that I don't agree with him. I don't think he compromised at 15 weeks. I understand I understand what he's saying. I get all that, but I don't agree. So that's the only issue I'm apart from him on right now. Okay. Or at least that I'm aware of that's coming to my mind right now, but we've got to get our country secured. We got to have a mass deportation and get people out that are here to hurt us. We don't want another 9/11. Not at all. We don't, or worse. Now they've let hundreds and hundreds. That was only three to five people, I think, that pulled that off, that mastermind behind that. We've got hundreds of them here now on the terrorist watch list who mean us harm. I mean, I'm not going to get into fear, and I don't want you to be fearful. Like God says, do not let your hearts be troubled. We're not going to be anxious or afraid or any of that. I mean, we know that, but there is a wisdom that we have to have too. And I think that God's put Trump in this position. And I get tickled at how all these court cases are just falling apart on their own. I mean, what the enemy means for bad, God will use for good. God will dismantle it and discredit. I mean, look what he just did with Fannie Willis, or is that her name, down in Georgia. Turns out the woman that's prosecuting him is now going to have to sit on a witness stand of her own because of all kinds of things she's been into. I mean, it's funny how everything's just unraveling because there's no meat on the bone in any of these cases. It's obvious that it is strictly a political ploy to keep him off the ballot. So anyway, Trump's not perfect. He's got a lot of issues. He's got a lot of things that he deserves, you know, us to be frustrated with him about, you know, all that. But I thought when he won in Iowa, I thought he was gracious in his acceptance speech, or in his, address to the people who'd voted for him. I thought that he showed that decorum. And the other thing I want to say about it is I think Trump understands the gravity of the seriousness of what's at stake in our country right now. So something tells me that he might, I mean, maybe I'll be wrong, but something tells me he's going to tone a lot of that down. Because, you know, when he ran the first time, he didn't know better. The country wasn't in the shape it's in right now. We are this close to Marxism. We are this close to a nuclear war. And so I think with that, the gravity of that just sitting in and in his heart and just knowing what's at stake now, I think he's going to be more measured in how he portrays himself on the microphone. I hope. So I'm hoping for the best with that, but I'm Trump all the way now, y'all. Love DeSantis. I think he would make an excellent president once Trump gets a lot of this settled down, once our country has some sanity back and we have our safety secured again. I mean, it's never totally secure, but what I mean is at least we've got a lot of the pending threats, you know, the wolves away from the door. When Trump gets in there and settles it all down, I'd love to see DeSantis come in and maintain it, you know, but the one to actually get it back, the one to actually get us back there at this moment, I think it's Trump. And yes, he's a pit bull, but he's our pit bull. Okay. It's like when you go to court and you hire a lawyer, you want a pit bull because he's your pit bull, right? He's fighting for you. That's what we need right now in this moment. And I'll tell you, this administration, we can't afford them another 4 years. We can't afford them another year. I am actually concerned about getting to November with how much they have just dismantled our country and been knocking down these load-bearing walls with everything they've got. I mean, they've got hammers swinging at them every day. So I'm very hopeful that the walls stand long enough, even if they're wobbling, long enough for this election to happen, Trump can get in there and he can reinforce them. That's my hope. All right. Real quick before I go, new book, Lady Up America, coming out February the 8th. Y'all, this is my whole heart in here. It's an extension of the app. So y'all hear me talking about all the time, the Lady Up America app. So what God's been showing me and teaching me the last 3 years in putting this movement together, these tactics and techniques together on how we show up in this election in the best possible influential manner that we have available to us. All of that I've been talking about, I am over the holidays, put it all down in a concise book, and it's not very thick. You guys can see it's a very quick read, but I tried to make it very absorbable, but yet a lot of really good food for thought in here. So I'm excited and can't wait for you guys to get it. If you want to go on and pre-order it, you can go to ladyupamerica.com and pre-order it. And then I will sign it for you and send it to your mailbox. I'm going to be doing that with, the first probably 100 or two of those. And then the rest will just have to go through Amazon because I won't have the ability to do any more than that. We can get ready to really ramp up for election season. And also if you are if you lead a women's group, either a Christian women's group or a Republican women's group, then reach out to me. Also on the website, there's a Get Out the Vote 2024 workshop that I'm giving. And we can talk about that because we need to arm our Christian conservative women up now with all of these techniques to be able to influence friends and family and children. I'm not teaching you in here how to go be an activist or go run for office. What I'm trying to teach us how to do in here is how we can be super influential in our conversations so that one conversation at a time, we win people to our values. We can do that at scale as conservative Christian moms. We can win our country back and we can convince people, not convince them, but win people to Trump's policies. They may not be able to stomach him as a person, as a personality, but if we can get them to look away from his personality and at his policies, that's the work we have cut out for us this year. Okay, let me pray with you. Father God, I thank you so very, very much for every precious woman who's watching this right now or listening. Lord, I just ask you to empower her, Lord, to give her insights and to give her courage, Lord, to take a stand for you in this cancel culture that we live in. Lord, this culture that is so vulnerable right now and so lost. Lord, more than anything, the church needs to rise. There's no cavalry coming out of Washington. You've shown us that, Lord. It's the church who has to rise. And Lord, help her learn how. We say that, but what does that look like at the practical level? Lord, I ask for her to have that wisdom from you and to learn these techniques. And Lord, that we would, as women holding hands across the miles, that we would join forces for you and win our country back to you, Lord, so that you can heal our land. Pray that with all of my heart in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, ladies, we got this. We got this. Once a week now on the podcast, because it's election season. So I will see you back here next week. And I love you all. We got this. Lady up. Lady up around this house. Lady up.